Hello, listeners, and welcome to another edition of the Built on the Border podcast. With you, as always, I'm your host, Tom Randolph, and with me in the studio for another week, my good friend, my co-host, Tommy Watson. How are you doing, Tommy?
I'm doing good. Slowly recovering from a pretty fun birthday weekend, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, Tommy, you turned 23 over the weekend, finally up there with the big dogs, big 2-3. But yeah, overall, very fun weekend. We kind of got kicked it off Saturday morning, headed on over to the Brookside around 11 o'clock, got settled in.
Literally the first people there.
Yeah, we were the first people at the bar, had some lunch, and then made our way outside once the crowd on the patio started to congregate a little bit more, and watched some good tournament action, and then came back here and went out to Westport here in Kansas City, and we saw a celebrity out
Saturday night. Major celebrity.
We encountered Alex Morgan at the Firefly Lounge. Alex Morgan, for those of you who don't know, probably the greatest women's active soccer player right now.
Certainly the best looking.
Yeah, absolutely. But Alex Morgan, her husband was just recently traded to Sporting KC from the Seattle Sounders. So maybe she's going to make a habit of spending
more appearances. We may start having to hit up whatever bar that was.
It was the Firefly Lounge. I'm not a particular fan of it. But, you know, at a certain point in the night, sometimes it's the allure is too much. And yes. We certainly made the right call to go there on Saturday night.
Indeed.
She was kind of mobbed by a lot of people, but your friend Chris, whose birthday it also was this weekend, had me get a picture with her, which was pretty cool.
He was brave enough to go talk to her and get a picture with her, and she told him that 23 is a pretty shitty age.
Yeah, well, I think I wouldn't be in agreement there. It's a fine age, but I think we all kind of realize it's mostly all downhill after 21. But anyways, pretty packed weekend in terms of sports stuff to talk about, so we'll go ahead and dive right in. We'll go ahead and get started with the news that came out today that the NFL, for at least a season, is suspending their blackout policy, which is if all the tickets for a game don't sell, then the NFL will most likely blackout a game for that market. So you can't view the games on TV, which hasn't really ever been a problem for us as Chiefs fans, but in certain markets it is kind of an issue. It was an issue last year. In 2014, there actually were no blackouts in the NFL, but there are some markets that have struggled in the past. Tommy, you think this is a good move for the NFL?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like you said, it doesn't affect the Chiefs so much, but with, like, Jacksonville and Cleveland, who, like, struggle perennially, it helps them out a lot. But you know what? It's not really worth it for the NFL to enforce it. I mean, they already make money hand over fist. It doesn't really teach teams a lesson by, you know, blacking out the game locally. It doesn't help attendance. It's more just a punishment.
Exactly. I think it'll be good because, one, it's going to allow them to venture into some digital platforms. There actually is going to be a game that's going to be broadcast on television this year. It's going to be a Week 7 matchup between the Buffalo Bills and the Jacksonville Jaguars. That game will also be up for bidding for digital platforms online. So people can actually, you know, these larger media companies that have a strong presence online, Yahoo, maybe even Google, who knows, Apple. And those are just examples of entities that might have an interest in streaming that game. They can actually bid for that service. So that'll be interesting as the NFL kind of evolves into this kind of new age of digital media. I'm interested to see the direction it takes. And I'm also glad that, you know, there's no potential of any blackouts this year.
No. I will say there is one downside to that, though. I think there was a correlation with ticket prices and blackouts to where they were dirt cheap when a blackout. You remember when we went back in 2009, watched the Chiefs versus the Browns?
I do. I tried to kind of erode that memory from my brain because, if I remember correctly, was it Jerome Harrison?
Jerome Harrison ran for 286 yards and 3 touchdowns.
And Josh Cribbs had
threw in 2 kick returns himself for touchdowns.
That was a game, you know, again, I remember it as much as I tried to forget it. I remember it very vividly. And I remember people kind of being like, who the hell is this guy, Jerome Harrison? And he ran all over the Chiefs. And I think that still stands as the most yards ever rushed against the Chiefs defense.
That's correct. That's actually the third highest rushing total for a single player in a game in NFL history.
And the Chiefs have that piece of history to be proud of. Well, anyways, kind of shifting gears away, we don't really have much to talk about the Chiefs this week. Other than the Chiefs have about roughly $2.5 million left in cap space.
Second smallest in the league.
Yeah, just to the Saints, who have approximately $700,000 left in cap space. They're obviously going to have to clear some of that, because it usually takes around $5 to $6 million to sign all the rookies, considering the fact that the Chiefs have about 10 draft picks this year. That's what they're estimating they'll have once the compensatory picks are put into place. So they're going to have to do some more financial finagling.
And magic.
I think a result to maybe a casualty of that is Chase Daniel, unfortunately. He can, if we cut Chase Daniel, that's a $3.8 million relief on our cap. There's not a lot of players that we can really get away with by doing that. It's unfortunate because I think it's going to happen. They haven't announced that official release yet, because I think that Chase Daniel was a large reason why Jeremy Maclin decided to return to the state of Missouri and come play for the Chiefs. But I'd like to see what happens. I think having him as an insurance backup is great, because I think he's one of the best backups in the league. We'll see how that kind of progresses. Shifting gears now, actually finally shifting gears, we're going to go over and talk about some Royals spring training, which we've kind of talked about some struggles with the pitching staff thus far. It's starting to be a little more prevalent, starting to make me a little more nervous. Edison Volquez and Vargas both have had some pretty rough outings thus far in spring training. And then we learned yesterday, that
Brandon Finnegan is going down to the minors, going down to Double-A.
He's
going to
be going down to Double-A for the team down in Northwest Arkansas. I understand the move, because I know we want to get him valuable minutes as a starter, if that's what they're setting him down there to do. I think ultimately we want to have Brandon Finnegan in our starting rotation if he shows that. He has had a little bit of a rough spring. Ned Yost talked about it a little bit. I'm okay with that decision. I think having Chris Young, that signing will bolster our bullpen. We don't really need any help in the starting rotation. So from a bullpen and a starting rotation standpoint, Finnegan doesn't really fit in anywhere yet. No. He was so instrumental in that playoff run. He threw some really big innings for us. So you'd like to have him up just as kind of a reward for what he was able to do. But I don't think there's really a spot on that roster for him yet. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
You know, I think we're going to miss him kind of like we're going to miss Terrence Gore, because Terrence Gore is obviously not making the major league roster.
Right.
And he'll just stay in the organization. It'll be another September call-up. And then Finnegan is going down the minors because I think the team decided that having a lefty starter is way more valuable than having him in the bullpen, considering he's not necessarily a set part of the bullpen. And especially with Hochever coming back and being able to throw more innings, you know, it's a question of even how much we would use Brandon Finnegan.
Right. And Ned said specifically, he said, and I'm quoting, we just felt that it was better for him to go down. He had a huge workload last year. He hasn't really been sharp, or he hasn't been real sharp in spring training. Just to get him back down and have him going again and have him ready for whenever we need him. And I think that's, you know, bodes well, because I think he might be one of those midseason call-ups, late August, early September call-ups, when we need some guy to bolster the rotation due to injury or someone's not performing well. God forbid Vargas or Volquez, this thing is not just a flash in the pan and they are going to have some rough outings this year. It's nice to know that he's down there if we need him. But other than that, the Royals are now 13-7 in the Cactus League, which means since that 9-0 start, they've now gone 4-7. So not as an impressive stretch in the last 2 weeks. But again, how much stock do you really put into spring training games?
I think the Royals have proven over the years that spring training record means nothing, because I believe they've finished probably in the top three of the Cactus League for like the last decade, and it hasn't really, until last year, has not transferred onto the field.
Right. And yeah, that's true. I don't think you can put a lot of stock into spring training, but you know, you and I have talked about this a little bit almost ad nauseum this week. The rotation doesn't look great. I mean,
it really doesn't.
Not even just, I mean, Volquez and Vargas removed, there are still other starters that are struggling.
I was looking at the stats today, and actually, of our five projected starters, Volquez, Ventura, Guthrie, Vargas, and Duffy, four of them actually have an ERA north of 9 right now. Volquez is sitting at 9.72, Ventura at 10.29, Guthrie at 13.5, Vargas at 17.5, and then Duffy has a respectable 4.5.
Yeah, and Duffy's pitched the most innings out of that entire rotation, correct?
Yes, 13.1 innings pitched, and Guthrie's actually only thrown two, so two rough innings that he pitched, but
again, we'd like to see, it's not what, We're not saying it's the end of the, you know, the end of the world here, but that's not what you want to see. You'd like to see a little bit better production.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to sit, you know, write this season off because that would be the ultimate panic move. But, you know, we'd like to see things get shaped up a little bit more before the start of the season.
Yeah.
We were looking at ESPN Magazine the other day, kind of both flipping through it, and I was not a little, I was a little perturbed by where they have us finishing. I understand the reasoning behind it, certainly. The AL Central is going to be kind of a crapshoot this year. But they have us finishing third. They have the Detroit Tigers finishing in first, the Indians in second, us in third, the White Sox in fourth, and then the Twins being a seller again. What are your thoughts on that prediction by ESPN Magazine?
I can definitely see that. I mean, I picked the Royals to finish second or first myself, but that's, I mean, how do you really tell at this point? The moves that were made in the offseason, especially in the AL Central, it's just too many things changed, and we don't know really anything yet.
Yeah. That said, we don't know anything yet because the season hasn't started, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yep.
I'm very ready.
2 weeks from today.
Yeah. So, getting away from professional sports, we're going to start talking about the weekend in basketball. We'll just go ahead and start and get the pain out of the way. The Jayhawks suffer a pretty demoralizing defeat yesterday to the in-state rival Wichita State Shockers. You know, honestly, I was, you know, I've been very candid about this with people I've talked about the game today. After that, you know, about 10 minutes to go in the second half, I was ready for the season to be over. You know, there was a possibility that maybe the Jayhawks were going to mount a comeback. At one point, we got it within six, and then we just collapsed again. They did what we've talked about all year, which is they start off strong. They start off consistent. They're playing tough physical defense, and then at the end of the game or at some point in the first half, they just completely lose sight of what the game plan was. If you look at the breakdown, in the first 15 minutes, they held Wichita State to 16 points on a sub-40% shooting clip. The rest of the way, the Shockers scored 62 points in the final 25 minutes of that game. So somewhere along the way in that first half, they just got their heads up their asses. Honestly, I've never seen worse defensive rotations. I've never seen players so slow to come out on screens and help. Frank Mason played atrocious defense. Actually, I think the best time that we looked on the floor in the second half was when they pulled Frank Mason and put Devontae Graham in to spot him some minutes. Nobody on that team showed any desire to win. I only saw the demoralization of this team after the loss, when in fact they should have been pissed off about it at halftime. They should have been pissed off about it 10 minutes into the second half and shown some sort of spark that would lead you to believe that there was a pulse left in this team. They didn't do that for me at all. And I've gone on record with saying this is my least favorite Kansas team, I think, maybe ever, because there's no heart. There's no one out there that really indicates that they really give two shits about winning.
Yeah, you know, I agree with that. I think the biggest problem with this KU team all season is they were so emotionless. You know, Perry Ellis, who should be the team leader, was probably the best player on the team before, you know, going down with that injury, slowed him down a little bit. But, I mean, he's like a robot out there.
Right.
Not in a good way, like an emotionless, like detached way. And it was painful to watch. Honestly, when I watched that game, I kind of thought, and after looking at the stats, I think it backed it up, that Devontae Graham was the only one who looked like he wanted to win out there. He went out there, 17 points, played 29 minutes, which is 12 more than he averaged the whole season.
Yep.
And, you know, I guess he was the only one who wanted to win.
Yeah.
He didn't get the message that they weren't going to play that day.
Yeah. It's just, you watched him up and down the floor, and, you know, you got the effort from guys like Traylor and Lucas when they were in the game. But those aren't the guys that are the central focus of the team. You want guys like Oubre, Mason, Ellis, Brandon Green to step up and do something. And that they were so absent yesterday. One, Brandon Green has not been able to really hit a shot since, I don't know, December?
Like February or something?
Yeah, no, it's late at
Yeah, you're right. Not
December. That second stretch of Big 12 play, he basically disappeared. And you look at the numbers, and, you know, Perry Ellis got his points. Frank Mason got his points. You know, but I would love to see the plus-minus of these guys and consider how much they gave up on the defensive end. I mean, it was just that 62 points in 25 minutes, I mean, that's absurd. If they score at that clip, they're going to score 100 points in the game. And that is not the mark of a Kansas team. They were not ready to play yesterday. And people have been quick to blame Bill Self. And yes, the Jayhawks have not been the type of team we expected in certain years in the tournament. But I think it almost became a thing of he seems exasperated with these guys that he can't get them up to play for a game. And, you know, it's the coach is supposed to take responsibility for a loss. But I think Bill has done almost everything he can to get this team motivated to play for this game. We shouldn't forget that they did finish first in the Big 12 again. They won their 11th straight Big 12 title. They played the toughest schedule in the country. They made it to the Big 12 tournament championship game. They went 27-9, but still, it doesn't feel like a season of success. It feels like a team that lost all the time, and that wasn't the case. So I'm ready for next year to start, but looking forward to next year, we don't have anybody fresh coming in. I mean, Perry Ellis is probably around for another year because his draft stock is nowhere within where it should be with a player of his talent. Oubre is probably the only guy that's going to leave, well, and him and Alexander. But then you're stuck with Frank Mason, Wayne Selden, and Perry Ellis. And those are the three guys that were basically the poster children for this team this year. Maybe I'm being, you know, hopelessly pessimistic about this basketball team right now. But until something changes with the way this team approaches the game from an attitude perspective, you know, I'm expecting a similar result next year. And I don't think we repeat as the Big 12 champions again next year.
You know, I can definitely see that. I came up with this thought when you were talking about the team's attitude this whole year. And, you know, I was kind of wondering, you remember back at the beginning of the season when they took that whooping by Kentucky?
Yeah.
It almost makes you wonder if that just broke their spirit for the whole season. Because, you know, they were in Kentucky's region.
Right.
And they knew, they kind of already had that attitude of like, you know, we're not going out to win the national championship. We're going out to see how far we can make it in this tournament, which is never really a good attitude,
right,
especially for a top program like Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, like, maybe they just knew in the back of their minds that even if they beat Wichita State, they would still have to play Notre Dame, who's doing fairly well in the tournament so far. Mm-hmm. And then after they get through that, they're most likely going to have to face Kentucky again.
Yeah.
And try and overcome the horrors of that game at the beginning of the season.
But then I think on the other foot, you want a chance to play Kentucky again. You want a chance to redeem yourself.
And, you know, I think that's the way Wichita State played.
Yeah.
I think they want to get back and do exactly what Kentucky did to them
last year
and ruin that perfect season.
Exactly. So, you know, I think we could talk about this Jayhawks squad till they're blue in the face. But I did want to talk about, should they stay or should they go? We've got a lot of guys on this team who could make a jump to the pros, who could end up having a career in the NBA. We'll start with Perry Ellis. You know, should he stay? He definitely should stay. I think he's got a lot more skills to develop. Could he go to the draft and maybe sneak into the first round? Possibly. But I think people will be concerned about him having a killer instinct at the next level. People were concerned about Andrew Wiggins having a killer instinct at the next level, and it almost hurt his draft stock coming out of the league. If they thought Andrew Wiggins lacked a killer instinct, I can't imagine what scouts think about Perry Ellis. So I think he should stay. Oubre is probably leaving for the NBA draft. He's had some flashes of brilliance. There were some games where he would make the hustle play or he'd get out in transition. He's one of those kind of D-3 guys that a lot of GMs in the NBA kind of foam at the mouth over. And I think he'd be a good fit with a team like the Pistons or with the Celtics, where he doesn't really need to do a lot to get his points, but he just needs to be in the right spot. I think he needs to work a lot on his floor spacing, because there were times yesterday where Oubre had no interest in going anywhere but within 25 feet of the basket. He just played on the perimeter practically the entire game.
Was he the one who had the ball poked away from him and, you know, kind of half tried to go get it back, and then the Wichita State player
beat him right to it.
And then took it in for the dunk? I mean, I don't think anyone that looks good for anybody.
No. But I don't think his draft stock can get worse, really, with another year under his belt. I don't know how much better it can get. Actually, you know, I take that back. Reverse that. I don't know how much better his draft stock can get, but I definitely think a year under his belt, if he continues to perform the way that he did in some games down the stretch where he's just very inconsistent, it could definitely hurt him down the stretch. I think he ends up going. I think he should. If I was in his, if I was somebody in his ear, like an agent or somebody, I would say this is your time to go to the draft. I think maybe he'll wait to see where his stock is projected coming when we get closer to the combine. And then there are some other guys that are thinking about going to the draft. I think Cliff Alexander certainly will, but he's nowhere near ready for the pros. We saw that when he played, when he's actually on the court this year. But if that NCAA eligibility ruling does not go in his favor, or it's not resolved by the time the date to declare for the draft is, I think he's gone as well. And then the last one, which kind of surprised me that people are even talking about it, is Wayne Selvin. Because Wayne Selvin has not even been close to the player that people expect him to be.
He was non-existent at Wichita State.
He didn't score.
No points, and only recorded two stats. He has one rebound and one steal.
Yeah. I mean, if you're him, you would have to. I would just be completely reevaluating my career as a basketball player. He had some great plays in the Big 12 tournament. He had a great game against TCU. Had some a great game against Baylor. But then he disappears. If you are going to, if you consider yourself one of the top 30 players in college basketball, which I think he has the potential to be, you should not disappear in a game that important like that.
Absolutely.
So I think if he is thinking about leaving for the draft, he's absolutely out of his damn mind. But again, I'd kind of like to see him go just so we don't have to watch him play basketball anymore. And I know I'm being very negative on this team, and I think if I give myself some time to kind of let the anger and everything wash out, I think I'll have a little bit more of a positive outlook on the way these guys played this year because they did accomplish a lot. But right now, I'm frustrated.
Yeah, staring at the score on the screen right now, this Wichita State over Kansas score is just not helping with the emotion.
No. That said, a 7-seed advance, it's an upset. This great, fun tournament continues. The Big 12 continues to kind of disappoint in the tournament. And I think I may have shared this stat last week, but I'll reiterate it again. The Big 12 has only had one team appear in a Final Four in the last decade. Last Big 12 team besides Kansas to appear in a Final Four was Texas back in 2003. Since then, not a single Big 12 team has made it. Mizzou got to the Elite Eight and lost to UConn a few years back. Back when they had Damari Carroll and that team. But
I thought Oklahoma State went on a run.
No.
Not recently, but within the last seven years.
Not in the last
years.
Decade.
Not in the last decade?
No. They have not been. No other Big 12 team besides the Jayhawks have been to the Final Four in the last decade. Which is frustrating, considering that our, you know, fandom is such that we watch a lot of Big 12 basketball. The only team left from the Big 12 is Oklahoma.
Which I think they have a decent chance to go to the Final Four.
Right. They're in that weak side of the bracket.
Yeah.
Louisville had a close game against Northern Iowa last night. They pulled away at the stretch. I don't think Louisville's that strong on an opponent. I think that Oklahoma definitely could beat Louisville. Then you've got NC State on that side of the bracket as well. NC State beat Villanova in a great game, which I think was a pretty easy upset pick for a lot of people.
You know, I saw that, and I think that game was the upset that was not really an upset. I think when people heard that Villanova lost, they were all like, I guess that was probably going to happen.
Yeah.
I think everyone picked Villanova to be probably the first number one seed to be upset.
Yeah, and that didn't surprise me. And then the 2-seed in that bracket also wasn't really a surprise to get upset. Virginia lost to Michigan State, and I kind of wanted to talk about this a little bit because after watching the Jayhawks yesterday, I kind of started to get to thinking, you know, we have these incredible regular seasons. We have these great regular seasons where we win the Big 12 and we beat all these great opponents. We have this great strength of schedule. And then we get to the tournament and we lay an egg. Tom Izzo, on the other hand, he can get an underachieving Michigan State team that just saw two of its best players in the recent history of the program, Gary Harris and Adrian Payne, both go to the NBA. And they come back into the tournament as a 7-seed, and now they're in the Sweet 16 again. There was no reason why that Virginia team shouldn't win that game. That Virginia team has been one of the most talented basketball teams all year long. They were finished second, or excuse me, they finished first in the conference in the ACC in the regular season. They showed the fact that they're a talented team. They probably were on a fringe of being a 1-seed, and Michigan State takes it to them, and they showed no fear. And they know once it's time to start playing basketball in March that that's when they turn it on. And it started in the Big Ten tournament. They went all the way. And they pushed Wisconsin
all the way into overtime.
Yeah. And then they go into the tournament now, and they're beating teams that they're not supposed to. And, you know, I don't know, maybe there's a gene that Tom Izzo can share with Bill Self that gets these Jayhawks ready for for tournament time. But I've been very impressed with Tom Izzo and what he's been able to do with the Spartans in the last couple of years.
I agree. I think, you know, if you want to say for this year and the last couple of years with Bill Self, you know, not maybe getting his team up to play for the NCAA tournament, I think Tom Izzo is like the opposite of that. He gets his team, no matter how they did, to be ready to play.
Right. And I think it's a little bit, you know, I used to call it the Roy Williams syndrome, because Roy's teams would always kind of peak toward the end of the regular season, and then once the conference tournament and the NCAA tournament happened, they kind of shifted gears and were just kind of settled into a group. They didn't really improve. They kind of plateaued at the end of the year. That's kind of become the trend of these Bill Self teams. Now, you can point to 2008, you can point to 2012, where we played the national championship, won one in 2008, and say, you know, you're overreacting. Bill does a great job at getting teams ready to play for the NCAA tournament. That's true. Those are two examples of when he could take teams deep. But when we aren't going deep, we're usually exiting very early.
It's like either Final Four or exit in the second round.
Yeah, it's Final Four or bust. And I think that's a fine mentality to have. But I think you got to play to win each game individually to go on that run. Your goal should be the Final Four, the national championship. But you shouldn't look too far ahead. But let's stop talking about the Jayhawks again. I know we were getting off the Jayhawks anyways. Let's go ahead and just talk about the tournament action so far. So you kind of had a little breakdown of how you thought this weekend went.
Yeah, you know, I decided to come up with some little things right here. I got my biggest disappointment so far in the tournament was Iowa State.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the way they played in the Big 12 tournament, they would ride into the NCAA tournament with some major momentum, at least make it to like the Elite Eight or something. But
yeah.
Nope, first round loss.
Yeah, I had them going to the Sweet 16. I actually think I had them in the Elite Eight. One of three Sweet 16 teams that I did not pick. My biggest disappointment, and I won't get into it much deeper, it was the Jayhawks. But that goes without saying, or saying a lot.
Yeah.
So next, you had your biggest surprise.
My biggest surprise, and I don't know if we should really be surprised, is back to Michigan State. You know, they hadn't done a lot this season, and, you know, they probably are just catching fire at the right time, too, on top of Izzo being a great coach. But the way they played in the Big Ten tournament, coming into this tournament now and having a great shot to continue their run.
Yeah.
I think they can give Oklahoma everything they have.
Yeah.
I think they have the potential to win that game.
You know, I think my biggest surprise was Northern Iowa losing to Louisville. I know they were the lower seed, but I felt like both Northern Iowa and Wichita State kind of got shafted a little bit with with what I consider to be an underseeding. But they kind of got it handed to them last night by the Cardinals. So they were my biggest disappointment. I really liked Seth Tuttle and what he was able to do with that program, you know, being their star player. Biggest upset. Who do you think was biggest upset this weekend?
You know,
I would have to say it was the Big 12. I mean,
Big
12
in
general.
It's an interesting way to look at it, but it probably is. The Big 12 in general, the way they performed this tournament was awful.
Yeah. Baylor, Iowa State. Oklahoma State was not they were beaten by a 9 seed, so that technically is an upset. Texas lost to a Butler team that I didn't think was as good as Butler teams in the past. I think that Texas team had a lot to prove in that game. And then, you know, of course, the Jayhawks losing, and the only team now in the Big 12 still standing is Oklahoma.
I will say, though, I think Baylor provided us with the most entertaining game so far in their first round loss to Georgia State.
Yeah, that moment was amazing, and I think that'll be what you remember the most about this tournament. Unless in the Sweet 16 Kentucky gets beaten by West Virginia. I think the moment people are going to remember from this year, from 2015, is Ron Hunter and his son Ron Jr. RJ, and what they were able to do in beating Baylor in the opening round on a amazing shot. I mean, he was closer to half court than he was to the actual 3-point line when RJ took that shot. He only had 5 points leading up to that shot in the game, so he was basically been a non-factor. And then you watch his dad, who's on a little wheelie cart to support
torn
Achilles, and falls to the ground in excitement. And you know, that's just fun to see that kind of father-son relationship, and them getting to go through that experience together. That was just great.
You know, that shot's another, that's a no, yes
yeah,
shot.
Exactly.
It's ill-advised until he makes
it. Until it goes in. And I think as soon as that ball was on its downward trajectory, there was no doubt that was going in.
And, I mean, that also, that kept a 12-0 run to end that game for Georgia State.
Yeah, really impressive. And it was really great to see Kevin Ware, who, as some of you may know, was the Louisville guard who during their 2013 national championship run in an Elite Eight matchup against Duke, landed awkwardly, broke his leg, pretty horrific injury. Bone was sticking out. People wondered if he'd really ever be able to come back and be an impact player again. He sat out the 2013-2014 season and then applied for a hardship waiver and now played for Georgia State and was a pretty big contributor to that team. So it's a great feel-good story to see him back in action.
Yeah, it was definitely great to see him out there being able to continue his career, especially after I can't believe I even watched that video more than once.
Yeah. So we'll go ahead now and make our picks. We'll end the show with our picks for how the Sweet 16 is going to go. My bracket's still decently intact. I have 13 of the 16 teams picked the Sweet 16 with the, pains me to say this, the Kentucky Wildcats as my national champion. We'll go ahead and pick the games that are going to be played. We'll start over in the Midwest region with the 1-5, Kentucky versus West Virginia. I think we know who we want to win this game, but who do you have winning this game, Tom?
I have Kentucky winning this game. Yeah. I don't know who really has this picked as an upset.
I think I could see an instance where Dwan Staten comes out and he has a great game against the Wildcats, but I think he's really the only guy that can really drive an upset here against the Wildcats. They're just so big up front with Willie Cauley-Stein, Carl Anthony Towns, Dakari Johnson. They're so long. They're so strong. They're fast. You've got the Harrison twins. Now, Larry Brown went on record by saying he thought that this was a team that qualified for an Eastern Conference spot in the NBA. The very thought of that is ludicrous, but I think they are a really talented team that's going to blow West Virginia. Not out, but they're going to come out and play hard after. You know, not an outstanding performance, only beating Cincinnati by 13 in the last round.
Yeah, you know, I would say West Virginia's only shot right now is the fact that Kentucky does not have a really strong ball handler, so they may be able to do something with the press, but I think that's about the only shot West Virginia has.
We'll have to wait to see. Moving down the bracket in the Midwest region, we have the 3-7 matchup. We have the Notre Dame Fighting Irish against the Wichita State Shockers. Tommy, who do you have in this game?
You know, originally I actually picked this matchup, and I had Notre Dame beating Wichita State, but the way Wichita State played Kansas, if they're not coming off a hangover from that game, I think they could do the same thing to Notre Dame.
Yeah, I agree. I think the matchups here are really interesting. I think it'll be nice to see Jerian Grant and Fred Van Fleet square off against each other. Those are two very talented point guards that I think are going to go to war this weekend. I'm excited to see that. I'm going to go with Notre Dame in this game. I think Jerian Grant is a really talented point guard. The game that Connaughton had, the almost leprechaun-looking player for Notre Dame, who I didn't know much about because I didn't really follow Notre Dame much this season, but he had some huge plays down the stretch, a big three from the corner, and then he blocked another three from the corner that could have won the game for Butler at the end of regulation.
That was impressive.
He came and he really showed that this Irish team is for real. So I've got the Irish advancing. So let's go over to the east part of the region. On Friday, we've got NC State versus Louisville. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and go with the Wolfpack here. I've been really impressed with what they've done. They played a close game with LSU. They played a really close game with Villanova. I think Louisville's kind of had an easy road here thus far. I mean, they played UC Irvine, and they almost got beat. And then they played a Northern Iowa team on not one of their better nights. I've got the Wolfpack winning this game. What about you, Tommy?
You know, this is a game that I really had no idea to begin with. I'm going to go ahead and I'll say Louisville, only because I want to give you and I respect for giving Louisville all they had, and I'm going to hope it says a lot for Louisville by beating you and I. So yeah. I'm going to go ahead and pick the Cardinals.
Okay. Moving down the bracket, this is a match, but I think this is the one I'm most excited for.
This should be a good game.
It's going to be Buddy Hield and the Oklahoma Sooners against Tom Izzo, Travis Trice, and the Michigan State Spartans. I think it's going to be a great game, and I think this is going to end up being one of the best games in the tournament. However, I think that the talent edge is going to go to the Sooners in this game, and I've got Oklahoma advancing and being the only Big 12 team to continue a run in the tournament this year.
And, you know, I think I'll stick with my pick of Oklahoma, but I'm going to be rooting for Michigan State.
Yeah, I will too. So moving down the region, or moving down to the South region, we're going to look at the Duke-Utah game. I don't think this is a game that needs a whole lot of speculation. I've seen Utah play this year. They played a pretty close game with Kansas. This, again, was one of those games where KU starts off great in the first half and has a really bad second half. But I've also seen Duke play in person this year, too. I think the combination of Tyus Jones Justice Winslow and Jahlil Okafor will just be too much for the for Utah, for that squad.
Yeah. You know, I don't even think I put a serious thought into this game. I picked Duke automatically.
And moving down to the South region, we got a 2 versus 11 matchup. Gonzaga, number 2 seed versus UCLA, the number 11, who we've argued about this. Some of us don't really think they even deserve to be there at that point. UCLA having that awful goaltending call at the end of regulation to lose to SMU in the opening round. I think the edge is to Gonzaga here. I'm sorry, to beat SMU in the opening round. I've got Gonzaga here. I think Kyle Wilcher is just going to be too much for the Bruins to handle, and I give the edge here to Gonzaga.
You know, I'm going to go with Gonzaga too, although just looking at UCLA's performance, they have played pretty well this tournament, but I'm going to go with Gonzaga.
Yeah. So, then moving to the last region, I'm going to go, and let's go ahead and start with the North Carolina-Wisconsin matchup, number 4 North Carolina versus number 1 Wisconsin. I think this is a pretty common pick. Most everyone had this Sweet 16 game picked right, especially if you're going by the seedings. I've been really, really impressed with Marcus Paige and his performance in the tournament thus far. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that North Carolina is going to upset Wisconsin. Originally, I had Wisconsin going to the Final Four. I don't think so anymore. I've got North Carolina winning this game in an upset.
You know, I know a lot of people are picking North Carolina, and a lot of people want North Carolina to win this, but I'm going to have to go with my Big Ten homer pick here and go with Wisconsin.
Yeah. And I love what Bo Ryan's done with that team at Wisconsin. That Badger squad is full of guys who really play the game of basketball fundamentally sound the right way. A lot of shooters, D-3 type of team. So they're a fun team to watch, but I still think I'll give that edge to North Carolina. And the last game is between Xavier and Arizona, who I think has been by far and away the most impressive team in this tournament thus far. And if I do have to predict a national champion after the first weekend of games, I think Arizona is going to win the national championship, and I think they're going to blow Xavier out of the water in their matchup this week. What are your thoughts on that game, Tommy?
You know, I, for whatever reason, I'm just not that interested in this matchup. I mean, I'm going to pick Arizona, but I guess it's maybe probably because when I filled out my bracket, I did not even give that part of the bracket a chance to go to the Final Four. I was thinking either Wisconsin or North Carolina, so I may have just overlooked them. So I will be interested to watch that game just so it'll prove me wrong.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's going to wrap up our picks here. I could never pick Xavier. They were too big of a rival when they were playing in the Atlantic 10 Conference against SLU. But that's the end of our picks here. And that's going to be the end of the show. I think our worst of the week was just talking about the Jayhawks and having to endure that game. So we'll go ahead and set the Jayhawks loss to Wichita State as our worst of the week. Next week we'll be talking about all the tournament action coming up starting this Thursday with the start of the Sweet 16. And we'll know who our Final Four teams are going to be by the end of it. So we'll talk about the Final Four next Monday. Talk about whatever else happens in the world of sports news here in Kansas City and across the country. But as always, thank you for joining us. For Tommy Watson, I'm Tom Randolph. Thanks for listening to another edition of the Built on the Board podcast. Have a great week, everybody. And I love you to yours, but just how long can I keep singing the same old song? And I love you to yours, but just how long can I keep singing?